So once again, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming along. I'm here to talk about the Great Migration, which is the migration of the Windows desktop to the Linux desktop, and how to get started. And this is not a technical talk. This is more of a political talk of how you actually get people on side that in such a way that they will support the project at a customer. So it's not going to be the year of the Linux desktop this year or next year, but it is going to be the year of increased adoption. It's steadily growing with every passing year. And who am I? I'm Patrick Fitzgerald. I've done lots of things, 40 years in tech. Founder of the Geeko Foundation, which is one of the sponsors of this event, and we raise money essentially for OpenSUSE projects and events. I'm also CEO of a small consultancy called iLayer in the UK, and we have done all sorts of things in the past, like migration of 7,500 Linux desktops and the management of that. And also a cloud system based on open source software, KVM and Xen, that has been, we started that in 2008 and is still running today. So yes, the Linux desktop again. The reason why I'm giving this talk is because I gave a similar talk a few years ago when at the end of Windows 7, I developed a product, which I'll go through shortly. But everyone's talking about right now, it's the end of Windows 10. Is there an opportunity? There is something called the EUOS. Has anyone heard of that? Yep. And I see that as an interesting approach, but it's very tech, it's technical. It's a technically based idea. It's not politically based. And to get the buy-in, we've all got solutions. We all know how to make Linux work on a desktop, but we're not looking, we don't need the solution. We need the adoption for people to go, oh, I have a problem, let's solve the problem. And that's where the technical comes in. And that's one entire floor of a bank in London, and that's all e-waste post Windows 7, and that's chucked Windows 7. It's just a massive amount of e-waste, and it's 50 million tons per year by upgrades that's generated. So yeah, so my experience. We've built this open source cloud system. We got a case study from IBM way back in 2010, I think, because we're doing open source cloud, which is quite new at that point. As a result of that, we got contacted by Canonical to help them migrate and manage 7,500 bank teller desktops, which ran one or two applications. And they're all already running on Linux, and they need to migrate to Ubuntu. And we were involved with doing that. We ended up managing that entire estate for about 2 years before they finally got their act together and decided to move to a thin client desktop. But that was a very interesting project that I can tell anyone about. It's there are 7,500 desktops, I think, in 163 bank branches, and some of the lines going into those banks were 128k bandwidth. So we had a system where we could do that. We did weekly updates, weekly complete security updates and application updates across the entire estate. And not once did any of us go to a bank branch to visit. It was all done completely remotely from an office, from their main office. As a result of that, we did other consulting projects with other banks about the very similar things. Then in 2018, I set up Required Magic, and we came up with, you can't see the dot, but that's our application that we wrote. We adopted the code that we used in with the Allied Irish Bank job, and turned it into a web interface and made it into turned it into a cloud-based system where you could migrate vast numbers of their desktops. And we're looking for money, looking for funding. We were partly funded, and then COVID happened. So that kind of put a stop to that. And also, it kind of really wasn't the right time to engage in a Windows to Linux migration, which is one of the things we're going to get to shortly. But right, meanwhile, it's time to have a meeting, because you've been recommended as the Linux expert, and the customer wants to escape from Windows, and it's just how are they going to do that? And you don't want them jumping out of the window, you want them to change their Windows systems. So meet Horace. He's the guy that you're going to have to deal with. And he's got a level of financial control. He's the person you need to decide, who needs to make the decision ultimately of this project. You've got to convince them. And of course, he'll get fired if it all goes wrong. And he knows that. And he doesn't need an operating system. He needs a solution. It's all about solutions. So you present Linux to the on the desktop. And he's got a really interesting, this is all done by AI, and I didn't ask anything except for scruffy man talking to Horace. And Horace's expression is exactly what I would imagine I would get if I just went to a financial control and said, hey, let's put Linux on the desktop. It'll be a sort of an amused, like, okay, get out of my office. But, you know, he's thinking, well, and you hope that he's thinking, this is a bit of a crazy plan and it might work. We've got new tariffs on US-based goods and possibly services, we don't know. There's a potential global recession. There's greater need for tech self-reliance. But many of the things that are currently in use on Windows are essentially web-based apps, which can run on anything. So the thing that we were looking at a couple of years ago, with the end of Windows 7, there was still a massive number of binaries, Windows binaries, that couldn't be run on a Linux desktop without emulation and virtualization, whatever. That sort of all changed now, because Microsoft themselves are moving everything onto web-based apps. But then the practical Horace thinks, you know, that's not going to work. I mean, really, he's not angry. He's not happy. Definitely not happy. And he's thinking, well, we're not going to get any support for this. The IT management are going to hate it. Who's going to do the first and second line support? I mean, really, this is just nuts. There's no native apps. I mean, you can't. Their internal applications are all Windows-based, and no user is going to like this. Every user likes the Windows desktop, except they don't. But that's a different story. And he's also probably Googled this topic, mass migration of Windows to Linux desktop, and that's what Google says. But it's interesting, the green, what's highlighted in green. It doesn't shut the idea out altogether. But now there's demand. Now this just could be the algorithm that I have on my newsfeed. I don't have any Windows things on my newsfeed, which is probably because I'm not interested. But I'm seeing a lot of this, and a lot of people referring to me these kind of headlines that are just popping up everywhere now. So there are whole governments in Europe that want to get away from Windows for a lot of reasons, and they're also objecting to the sheer cost of doing a migration from Windows 10 to Windows 12 or whatever it is. But it is actually a whole new world. Everything's different. We've got a whole new political system in the United States that is turning everything upside down. There are more browser-based apps. And the open source really is mainstream now. I mean, I was saying that years ago, but it's even more so now. Every passing year, there's more and more open source. Windows 10 has required the extra expensive tech. And potentially, I think I might have said it before, there's a global recession. It seems likely, and no one can predict it, but it seems it may be happening. So what else is different? Any bonus points for knowing the meme that this represents? Anyone? Yes. That's it, yeah. Trump always chickens out Tucker. So he's unpredictable. He's affecting global trade. He's starting wars and then stopping wars and doing all this. So therefore, digital sovereignty is even more important now than it ever has been. And of course, Horace knows that. He might not know it. He might be getting told it by his CEO or by shareholders. So what does it really look like when we're doing this kind of thing? You need a reality check of you know, what does the use case require? And one size does not fit all. You can talk about the different distributions, the different desktops, the applications that have come from Linux, that are on Linux desktops. But it's actually nothing, that's got nothing to do with it. It's the goal and the solution that Horace is looking for is a seamless migration from Windows 10, automated unattended overnight, and the following morning the user should be able to just log in and go, and if they're using web-based apps, they should just work. In other words, we'll try for 100% functionality from day one. But what the goal isn't is this thing that comes across all the time in open source is, well, there'll be a desktop environment competition. Oh, let's go for KDE, let's go for GNOME, let's go for something else. But that's not... What is really important is the use case. What does the customer need and want, and what works best for them? And that applies to the distribution as well. And it certainly is not an excuse to build your own distribution like some German states have, I think, where it's all fallen apart after the people who built the distribution got other jobs and was unable to be supported. And like I said, you know, building your own distribution is that way lies ruin, madness, and failure. And I'm not sure if you can read that, but you know, Horace isn't very happy because he was listening to a geek and who believed him, and then he left the job, and he's now got 1,000 systems that no one wants to touch. And size does really matter in terms of how you're going to do the distribution, how you're going to the size of the desktop estate. So if you've got less than 100 systems, there are certain reasons why that's more difficult. One of them is it kind of takes the same amount of consulting time to get to where you feel comfortable that, oh, well, these are the different systems that are out there, and these are the ones we need to support, because there'll be there'll be probably five or ten different types of system inside a company. Smaller companies, there's usually actually more different types because people buy on a whim. But more than 100, right up to thousands, that can be highly automated because you've got the consulting time to really plan, do a plan. But on the other hand, the larger the environment, the greater the politics and just how hard it is to get meetings in people's calendars. For example, Al at Irish Bank, there's a company called HCL, an Indian outsourcer. They managed the desktops after we left. Irish Telecom were managing the networking. Servers were managed by Wipro, another Indian outsourcer. And AD and authentication was managed by an internal team. But we need to coordinate with all those people. And you try and get, I mean, getting 4 or 5 members of different teams in the same company is one thing, but getting 4 or 5 members of different teams from the work at different outsourcing companies is even harder. But the other, on the other hand as well, the simpler the technology becomes, because generally larger companies buy in bulk 200 desktops and then they install them, then buy another 200, and usually it's the same model. So let's just, you know, here's an opportunity. If we get 1%, so 54 million public servants across the entire EU, if you get 1% of that, it's 540,000. If you could save 540 million euros by upgrading to Linux, then that's a massive win. And again, the Linux desktop is about 5% globally. So the economics continue. The cost of an update, and this is a Windows update, is very, I mean, these are very rough numbers. So you think an enterprise PC costs about 600 euros, maybe more, maybe less, but I think that's about a nice average. The upgrade to replace a desktop, and I'm being quite generous, one contractor could probably do 6 systems in a day, if you're lucky, which means with 1,000 systems, that's going to take 33 weeks to just do the upgrade. But of course, you would then get multiple contractors to do that. And why contractors? Because the internal IT team are too busy. They're always too busy, so you're always hiring contractors to do that kind of thing. Then if you get extra contractors, you need to have more project management, more management is required. Anyway, you're looking at probably total, if it's just one contractor, is 83K. So the minimum cost to do that is almost 700,000 euros. However, you say, well, we can use a free OS. But Horace needs more than just a free OS and to save money. He needs accountability if there are problems. He needs someone to blame if there are problems. And someone to sue if there are even bigger problems. And so it's risk that you just presented him with a massive package of risk and he doesn't want it. So get the hell out of his office. Because Linux is free, but it's not fee-free. Business is all about risk mitigation. That's why you get insurance. That's why you have companies with outsourcing companies that have massive insurance contracts of their own. Because if I get sued because I deleted some data at a customer's, they're going to sue me, and I have to have protection against that. So everything is somehow, somewhere, someone has to take the blame for something. So it's harder to do that with an unsupported operating system. So if we're going to do a Linux desktop, we need the back-end support of a Linux vendor such as SUSE. Otherwise, the whole thing's not going to fly. That's why the EU OS, in my opinion, is not going to go anywhere, because it has to have support from a major vendor. It's just, there's no other way to do it. So let's just assume that we've got SUSE or another vendor behind us. Well, of course, there's no hardware replacement cost, because we're just using the original hardware. I took a stab at a reasonable price for the support licensing for each Linux desktop. Say it's 40 euros. Consulting, 15k. Deployment costs, 10 days, 7.5k. Total cost is more or less 10% of what the previous figure is. It's very compelling. And because of that, you know, Horace is super happy. He might be the CEO. And I didn't massage these numbers, by the way. It just happened to be that this was 10% of the previous number. So it's pretty compelling. I mean, who doesn't want to save that much money on a 1,000 machine installation? And this is a new slide that I just came up with yesterday. So if you're a reseller, is anyone here an IT reseller? No? Okay. Well, you're going to need to engage a reseller or a third party to do level 2 support before they pass problems on to someone like SUSE. So what's a great way to sweeten the deal? Well, the reseller could buy all the systems at their write-down value, which if the machines are old enough, it's free. So you buy them for a pound or a dollar or a euro, and you lease them back at a pick a number, and you install Linux and become the second line support mechanism. And at the end of the lease, which could go on until the machines are all dead, but you could dispose of them in an economically friendly way, environmentally friendly way, and that's just that's one way to do it. It's much easier, I think, to do it that in something like that. But if you're going for support now, who does what? I would say that the internal support team would do the basic stuff, and then reseller does that, and the Linux vendor does. You know, they have to provide support for kernel, obviously, Wayland desktops, and that's the desktop. In my opinion, should just be the bootable desktop with the most basic things on it. No apps. No apps are covered by the support contract, because that turns into a nightmare. And also Active Directory functionality, so you can connect to the Active Directory. And so a support license. And I was thinking that probably part of that, if not maybe the majority of it, needs to go to SUSE to provide the third line support. Could contribute to an OBS system that's independent of OpenSUSE or SUSE, and contributes to the funding of, you know, just continue this whole thing about the Linux desktop. That's just something I thought through. But who could resist these kind of deals, right? Fantastic, really saving lots of money, but they're going to see empire-building IT leaders. And I've got a personal story about that, where I was working with a customer, and we were looking after their IT for 10 years, and they were gradually growing. And they got to a point where they said, well, our IT, our monthly charge, ended up being about the same price that they would... Well, it was more than what they could hire someone to do the job for full time. So I said, okay. So they left. So they hired someone, we did the handover, and the first thing that that person did was hire someone else, because he didn't want to do the work. He wanted to be the big daddy of the IT department of a growing bank. And then, long story, but basically, with only five, they had about 40 desktops at this point. They added five more desktops, and they, by the time, the last time I saw their price, their IT budget, it was £500,000 with an outsourced printing company to do all their printing. It just grew, and they we're charging them 40. It was a tenfold increase in their budget. So that's one thing. Desktop support teams, they're interesting because typically a Windows engineer or Windows systems use, there's one engineer per 50 to 100 desktops. If you're doing it really well, it's maybe more, but that's kind of average. I've got companies, I know companies that have more, they have, it's more like 1 to 30 or 1 to 25. Whereas I've got personal experience of looking after 7,500 systems with two guys, and one of them was doing, and one guy doing a part-time management job, just making sure the two guys were doing what they needed. So you can do massive economy of scale with a Linux desktop that is unmatched with Windows. Of course, hardware vendors might have a problem, which is a big problem, because the next update cycle that they're counting on for their budgets is going to be massively reduced because they won't see people buying their brand new systems. So how do you start if you want to get involved in this? The first thing is you find the Horus. You have to find the Horus and somehow get to know them. And do whatever you need to do to just to get them to do a brief consulting engagement with them to see the feasibility. And the feasibility is what kind of apps are they using? What kind of, and these are done by groups usually, and they can even be user groups inside LDAP. And you could just choose a group and say, well, these people are using Teams and almost nothing else, so let's try that. And you could do a trial with that. And then from there, from that experience, you can build a plan of how to migrate to other systems and other groups to a larger portion of the user base. Yeah, so that's kind of what I was saying there. You look at browser-based Java, Node, and RDP apps, where everything can exist unchanged. And what is interesting is that customers are increasingly unaware their apps are cloud-based. People just don't know. As more of the people start moving onto MS 365, it's seamless, more or less, and there are more and more companies using Google Workspace as well, and that was never a binary on someone's desktop. It's always been web-based, so it's easier now than it ever has been. There's almost no reason why people can't try this, especially when you on this other side you've got this potential large amount of risk because of what's going in the industry and globally, and the fact there might be a recession. And it's like, well, we've got all these systems we've already paid for. Why don't we try this? And we've already got the OS, right? So what we need is a Linux vendor's support, a training provider to manage the training first line and second line support, a selection of resellers who can do that second line support, and I'm sure they're out there somewhere. We just need to find them, and SUSE would probably know them. I know of one based in Switzerland who'd be very involved in this, and they're already doing it, actually. And of course, the community, everyone here, need to embrace the potential for the massive amount of change that will happen when there's a lot of people relying on the desktop Linux that we are partially responsible for. And Horace is still waiting for me to finish, but also for a solution. But finally, Horace is happy. We've been able to provide a low-cost solution. Acquisition costs are nothing. Support costs are almost nothing. Increased productivity because it's just faster. And he's going to be able to tick a box somewhere and in some environmental checkbox of a report saying, oh yes, we have a disposal solution for all of our computer hardware. And happiness is a happy Horace. Linux on the desktop, Linux on his desktop, and he feels free at last. Thank you. And there are references that you can't read. It's just some of the... that'll be in the PDF. Any questions?
Hey, during all these endeavors that you listed, how many questions and requests did you receive and your company receive about, for example, talking about impaired users and accessibility requirements?
To be honest, none.
Okay.
That was kind of... So you're talking about the desktop and
Yeah, and for example, a blind user has to...
No, but that's... No, that's... It's an interesting question, actually. No, we haven't. And my assumption would be that a lot of that is already covered on Linux desktops, and also the apps. Of course, the apps need to be made ready, and so that's kind of all we're doing is providing the conduit to you for people to use the app. So, yeah, it didn't really come up because it's not the right level of.
Okay.
Yeah, involvement. Yeah.
I can
good question
that.
Though.
Yeah. Thanks.
Hello.
Hi.
So, I work in the space of second level, third level support. You talked there, and you said that application support or printer support can be done by the on-site people, but this is not really the case most of the time because they really don't know much about Linux, and at the moment it's mostly mixed, so mixed environments where they have some Windows machines, some Linux machines, and in the end, most of the time, if there's an application issue, they will create a ticket to us, and we need to fix that.
So the problem would be though that the solution to that is more Linux knowledge inside the support team. But do you agree that there's a lot less support required in a Linux desktop than a Windows? Does anyone else have that experience? That Linux versus Windows in terms of support? Thanks. Good question.
Yeah, we used to run Linux on quite a number of lab PCs in a pharmaceutical laboratory setting. And it really, the support part really depends on what type of application are you running.
Yeah.
The main problem we had was that we had a number of laboratory information management and data analysis programs for mass spectrography and some specialist stuff that just wasn't reliably running on Wine or anything else. web-based apps typically do work, but I think the migration challenge is more getting the people out of the desktop-based apps into the web-based apps than on the operating system. There's, everybody by now knows how to operate a start button, a taskbar, and if they don't know it by now, they're going to need more support anyway. But it's really all about the applications.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that that's... we don't have the IE6 lurk-in crap anymore, thank God. So that's good, but...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the web-based apps are obviously the future, even if they're... And I think Simon's doing a presentation, might have done it already today or tomorrow, about using something called WebUI, which is a binary that talks to a browser so that you can install the app locally and it runs itself as a small web server and produces a window, which is part of your browser.
Like Electron or something, or WebAssembly. We've also been into that, but haven't really made that particular switch because of the lack of integration with the local operating system. So, but maybe let's continue this one over beers.
Yeah.
Thanks for your presentation, Andrew.
Pleasure.
Thank you for the presentation, Patrick.
Thank you.
I'm Ish. My question is more on when you presented how to approach a CIO, CTO, it was more focused on digital sovereignty and risk management and all. Mm-hmm. And all of that weighed in how quickly, how fast the CIO is going to take a certain decision or not. But if we think about Linux adoption, like in general, don't you think like the community effort should be more towards educational institutions for massive adoption of Linux desktops? I'm talking about schools, universities, because what I've seen from the other part of the world where I come from, if a person has been introduced to Linux from an early stage, be it a school, university, college, they tend to stick to it even at the workplace. Yeah. Even if they are given a Windows environment, they will still run certain things on the Linux on a personal basis. So I'm speaking mostly from the community perspective. Don't you think that we need to shift towards, okay, we're talking about end of 10, we're talking about, okay, maybe 2025 is the year of the Linux desktop, but are we being naive to put the effort toward talking to CIOs, CTOs for this adoption, or we could go at the source of where people will start using Linux and stick to it for the next 10, 15 years?
Yeah, good question. I guess what I didn't really mention is a Horace could be anyone at a customer. So there is someone that you need to talk to convince to give it a try. So that could be a school, a university, you name it, it could be anything. But if they've got investments, but the same rules apply, if they've got investments in tech, they've paid money for it, they expect results. If the results don't come through, you're going to get blamed, or your reseller is going to get blamed. So it's all the same kind of thing. I mean, yes, that's I agree with you 100% about getting Linux into universities and schools as quickly as possible. I think all the same mechanics still apply, the politics still apply. Does that answer your question?
Hi.
Hi.
So my question is, at what point and how do we start convincing these big tech corporations that have their own distributions to start focusing on desktops as well? Because a lot of these corporations, they work backwards from the customer, and if the customer is not explicitly asking for something, then they don't work for it or they don't work on it. So this creates a loop where nobody is getting out of what is currently running, which is Windows. So how do we get there?
I think right now there's a unique opportunity because of the political situation in the United States, because of the instigation of the war in Ukraine, the war in Israel, the massive amounts of financial uncertainty means that there's a likely a a global recession coming, which people need to save money for. They don't want to spend the money on. And this, I think, is this has been borne out in the numbers that I've heard, that the manufacturers like Lenovo and even Intel are saying there's not much demand for the new AI chips they're putting into laptops, and that's probably linked into that. So I think the economic situation makes it that people will be more likely to look for a solution that is not just Windows. Does that answer your question? Is it a good answer? Yeah. I just, given based on where I was, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when doing Windows 7 migrations and things like that, the situation, the world has actually changed significantly in many ways. The apps being web-based, the political situation where Trump is building a wall around America, and who knows what it's going to do there. And I think SUSE is perfectly placed to. I've just been told my time is up, but I'll just finish up by saying, I think SUSE are perfectly placed, being a European company, to deal with the European situation to try and help people doing more desktop work. My time's up. Thank you.